Well, hello there. Are you ready to talk about bombs? Bomb, 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 Iran. Hey, I have a pretty big announcement to make. I don't think bombs are what anybody is saying they are. Interesting, huh? This is about omission. What's going on with these bombs? Well, let me get to that in a second here. I had another revelation. I was thinking about these dead White House chefs I talked about. Well, and then I was watching this show. When these people do these shows by their people, right? A lot of yak, 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 yak in very little detail. So I tuned into this show while I was doing something else because, frankly, most of these people are just too boring. They're charming, but they're boring. But anyway, so it was about Anthony Bourdain being a CIA agent. And it made perfect sense because we've got these dead White House chefs. And I believe that likely all major chefs that we see on the TV screen are CIA agents because, after all, everybody eats, right? Put these chefs in key spots to spy on things. I remember from my days of watching World War II videos that Julia Childs, Julia Childs, I just looked at some pictures of her. Oh my God, how did they get away with that? Look up Julia Childs. What an ugly man in a wig. But anyway, so there were rumors that Julia Childs also served as a spy. So I started thinking about, well, yeah. Of course, this makes perfect sense that these major chefs are CIA agents, right? Because they can shift them around. Like, why did Anthony Bourdain go to all of those locations? Certainly, it wasn't just a talk about the food, now, was it? Besides the main fact, is he even dead? Okay. So, anyway, so then it dawned on me when I was kind of half listening to this guy rattle on about Bourdain being a CIA agent. And I realized the Culinary Institute of America. What does that stand for? The culinary, that has a C, right? Institute, that's an I. Okay, kids, get ready to cheer. Of America, that's an A. That gives us CIA. Culinary Institute of America is a CIA operation. Of course, it makes perfect sense. And then they could shift those chefs around, right? I mean, if people are talking secrets, who's really paying much attention to the chef, right? So anyway, so yeah, just for fun, look up some pictures of Julia Childs. They used to get away with some pretty crazy looking men in wigs to trick us, right? And us being the polite types, no one would say, hey, she looks like a man because she was a man. So anyway, so the big issue I have with these things is this. All the talk about these bloodlines, right? And the people on the screen. Keep this at the top of your brain, okay? They all believe they're part of this elite bloodline, but they're not having their own babies. So where are they getting these babies from? There must be some sort of special breeding going on because these people are reckless and don't really know what they're doing. So where are the celebrities in them getting their babies from? They are not having them themselves. There's some sort of special breeding going on to get rid of all these past mistakes. So I am proposing that somewhere in this planet, there is a breeding facility where they're getting these babies from. And if I were to swing a guess, I would say it is on a U.S. military base because they can't be handing out deformed babies to the top elites now, can they? But anyway, let me get back to the subject of today. For example, all this business about bombs, right? We're always talking about, well, are the bombs encased in uranium? Is that those tips that are going to shoot through us and give us cancer from that uranium? Well, maybe, maybe not. I was looking into the bombing of Dresden. Yes, Dresden. The reason I look is because I absolutely do not know, okay? So I started looking at all this stuff because I got all these bits and pieces in my brain, right? There's pockets of deformed children here and there that I want to look into. Where'd that come from? Was it the uranium or what was it from? Well, I don't like to ever bury the lead, but here's the trick here. They're always talking about encasing uranium in concrete. First of all, concrete is a very porous material. Because I don't believe they ever concern themselves with storing uranium, because the plan is to get the uranium for the smart meters, and they're using it in bombs. It's kind of like an extra little issue here, right? So I've been thinking about this step. What does this all really mean? And just like all these other things, like, for example, fluoride came from a deadly chemical, and they decided to just put it into our water to save the disposing fees, right? Well, they talk the same way about uranium. Well, we got a lot of it, so we're going to use it in these bombs. Well, are they really, is my question. And it's always about the omission, right? So I'm buzzing along here looking into bombs and stuff, and I think, well, wait a minute. Has anybody done a study about the most obvious bomb, the TNT? All bombs have TNT. They rate all of these bombing incidents by how much TNT was in the bomb, right? So then I was thinking, well, we know in Japan, General Curtis LeMay had those bombs specially rigged to fit in those B-29 flights, right? So then I started tracking down, where did those B-29 flights fly, right? And in the last show or so, I talked about the U.S. bombed Wuhan, China, right before they bombed Wuhan, China, right before they bombed Japan, right? Okay, so before all that, they bombed Dresden, because people were saying things about Dresden, like, well, why'd they bomb Dresden? Nothing was going on there. They knew the war was over. It was so crazy to bomb Dresden. Why'd Dresden get bombed? Well, I have the answer. Dresden got bombed because it was the last test run before Japan, because I put together a little timeline for myself. That's how you figure these things out, right? I kept thinking, Dresden, around the time frame of Japan, same time frame as China. So then you start putting dates down and taking a look, right? And so, because I tend to forget to tell you what links I have down below, I need to make an announcement. They're changing things. Oh my God, it's changing. Apple Podcasts will now contain transcripts. Now, I don't have a clue how any of this is going to work. And if you're thinking, oh good, she's going to start producing transcripts. No, sorry. What I don't know is, can I continue posting these links down below, or will they get just blown out of the space for the transcripts? Because they're going to produce these transcripts, I guess, just automatically. You notice they're doing this on YouTube now. You can select the transcript. But then they also have these things, well, if you want to do this, you do that. I'm like, oh, my head is spinning. So I don't know if my links will show up down below, is what I'm saying. So hopefully this system will continue working. So here are some of the things that I wandered around, because then I started wondering about uranium and concrete. Concrete is pretty porous material, right? So here's for some files that I was looking at. Who started the bombing of cities and targeting of civilians in World War II? Did the atomic bomb test fallout cause cancer? I tracked down the soldiers who were out of the Marshall Islands who have wound up getting cancer. Now, did they get cancer from that? Well, we'll take a look, right? And then I also have some evidence on reproduction toxicity. Let me see here. Also, I found somebody from 9/11. There was something in that 9/11 dust, because remember, they were, well, I don't think I ever mentioned this. Remember when I mentioned that? 9/11, they use thermite, okay? And that's why those buildings went down the way that they did. But I found some interesting things in that 9/11 dust. So anyway, so I've been quite a busy little bee. And also I looked at I found an interesting thing about how bombs are made, anatomy of a bomb mission. Then I found a basic site that says basic chemistry of explosives and hazards of homemade devices and chemical precursors. Then I have the Wikipedia page for TNT. There have been no studies really about TNT. So, are we getting this stuff from the TNT? Who knows, right? So just pull up a chair and I'll try to explain how I got here, okay? I also have a link for the site that has the storage and disposal options for radioactive waste from the World Nuclear Association. They never have really planned or implemented the storage part, right? Well, because this is a game board. They don't need to worry about storing this stuff. Nobody's going to be here in 30,000 years to find this stuff. We'll all be gone, I predict, like in the next year. Okay, so they never came up with storage. Well, that's on purpose, right? Why would they bother coming up with storage and spending money for storage when they don't need storage, right? Okay, so let's start off. I was trying to understand bombs. The atomic bombs dropped over Hiroshima and Nagasaki respectively released the energy equivalent to 15,000 to 20,000 tons of TNT. So in these bombs, the majority of the element being used is TNT, right? These bombings remain the only use of nuclear weapons in an armed conflict, and their devastating impact on civilians underscores the importance of preventing such events in the future. But they always bring in this nuclear part, right? Now, I'm not saying they're not using some nuclear, right? But the idea that all of these deformities are coming just from nuclear are boggling my mind, right? It appears to me that it could be coming from TNT. The explosive yield of a nuclear weapon is typically expressed as a TNT equivalent. So, because, for example, they had the Hiroshima and all those warheads, okay? And what I've also learned, and I'm going to give you a public service announcement here, and I hope that you will listen to me very, very carefully. I will be coming back and talking about Rwanda. Why Rwanda, you ask? Well, because Rwanda is what kicked off the Kigali Principles, which will kick off the UN being on the streets here. Because once this place is firebombed, they will need troops on the streets because obviously not everybody is going to be contained within those firebomb areas, right? People are going to be able to be running around. But here's the thing. In most of these cases, if you remember in Hawaii recently in Lahaina, the roads to exit were blocked off. Same thing happened in these other incidents. Roads were blocked off. Before they started the killing in Rwanda, the roads were cut off so people could not escape. Keep in mind, in Hawaii, they only had radios. They did not have internet. And yes, same thing as Rwanda. People were, in fact, trapped to die in their cars. They could not get cell phone services. I strongly suggest you get yourself some walkie-talkie radios. They have some great ones on sale. You want them the ones that will take batteries and have plenty of batteries on hand. Nothing wrong with doing some solar until they block the sun, but you need to have radios. They have really nice emergency radios with access to emergency radio channels. They're selling for about 20, 25 bucks a piece. Get your hands on a few of them. Have them in your stash. You may, let's say somebody needs to help you and they're going out to do something for you. You could give them the walkie-talkie to stay in communication. You can talk to your aunt in the next town if you have the right walkie-talkie. Services are going to be cut. So let me get to the focus. So what happened was that there's a couple different things here, and this got me kind of spinning for a bit, but it wasn't anything worth spinning over. It said the data suggested that birth defects in Fallujah are mainly folate dependent. So what I was doing was I was looking at the groups of children that have these deformities to try to identify, is it really coming from the uranium like everybody's saying? So I found a piece that said, as there have been 200 recorded cases of Iraqi children born with deformities in Fallujah, the families have called for an independent investigation into the matter, which they believe is being caused by the US Army's use of white phosphorus and depleted uranium. Sky News recently reported on families in the Iraq city of Fallujah who are calling for an independent investigation into their concerns about a rise in the number of newborn babies suffering from deformities. Well, how's all this happening? Well, the British and US militaries have demonstrated extreme irresponsibility in releasing depleted uranium into the environment, using it without proper monitoring or information about the risk it poses, even in their own countries. In January 2003, the US Navy admitted routinely firing depleted uranium from its Fallujah guns in prime fishing waters off the coast of Washington State since 1977. As a Dundrin test site in Scotland, around 30 tons of DU rounds have been fired into the Solway Firth. Only one has ever been retrieved, which was found in a fisherman's net. Both governments have been equally callous in their disregard concerning the long-term risk to civilians in countries where they have used depleted uranium. So that's the current theory. I ran across this one man who I consider to be pretty smart. His name is Busby, Busby. He said the most important thing about it is that uranium for a long time has been known to bind very strongly to DNA. Now, DNA is the target for all radiation effects, explained Busby. If you're looking at the reason radiation causes genetic damage and cancer, it's been well accepted since the 50s. Since the discovery of DNA in 1952, that DNA is the target for all genetic effects. So they've known this, okay? Uranium binds to it very strongly as it has a strong chemical affinity for DNA. This fact has been known for a very long time. Now, if uranium is radioactive and it attacks the chromosomes, clearly it's going to be much more dangerous than some kind of neutral substance that you drink and then goes out of your body. It's a calcium seeker and it binds to DNA. So that's the first thing. The second risk associated with the use of depleted uranium was revealed by a chemist in 2004. At that time, Busby drew attention to the fact that uranium acts as a sort of amplifier for normal radiation because it has a very high atomic number. We all live in an environment where we get gamma rays that come through our body and go out, he said. And of course, they're not good and they have an effect. But if you've got uranium inside you, then it intercepts this because of its high atomic number and all its electrons. And when it gets hit by a gamma ray, it shoots off a load of electrons, and this is called the photoelectric effect. All studies that have been done of people exposed to uranium showed massive chromosome damage. So when they look to see the chromosomes in their cells, in the peripheral blood cells, they find massive amounts of chromosome damage that leads to genetic effects, cancer, birth defects, and so forth. So that's the reason uranium is so dangerous. And I also believe they're setting us up with our diet that make us more susceptible to this, right? Because the early researchers into psychopaths, who were, of course, psychopaths themselves, that would be Cleckley. He was, and go look at the main page on my website. Right there on the main page, on the left column, I have all the data about how they tricked the research about psychopaths. Early on, they were putting us into sleep comas and stuff. They were giving people high amounts of corn and stuff. And I think this all had to do with the food makes these particles go crazy. But anyway, so the reason DU, or depleted uranium, penetrated the body so easily and spread in the environment was that when munitions explode, the uranium burns at a very high temperature, producing particles so small that they're effectively a gas, Busby says. He noted that instead of considering DU munitions as weapons of mass destruction, which it is, the U.S. and U.K. military see it as a wonder weapon that helps them efficiently blast the adversary's armored vehicles, and they don't really care about civilians dying as a result, the collateral damage. Likewise, the American and British governments remain in denial about the disastrous effect of DU weapons and potential negative consequences for nations far beyond the Ukraine conflict zone. Democracy is run on the basis of truth, on the basis of perfect knowledge. If people in a democracy have perfect knowledge that something that our government is doing that is killing them, then they ought to get another government quickly, Busby concluded. So, this folate business. 50 years ago, folate deficiency was linked to birth defects. Okay, so now we got this in the mix. So, is it possible? Because in Vietnam, and also in Fallujah, and keep in mind, never been to medical school, okay? It appears to me, I was looking at pictures of the children in the Polygon region. I was looking at pictures of children in Fallujah. And, that area. I'm a little bit tired today. But anyway, so I was looking at these pictures. What I noticed was the children in Vietnam had a lot of issues with their spinal cords, right? Well, if you have a lack of folate, folate is required to support the healthy development of the neural tube, which connects the brain and the spinal cord. Lack of sufficient folate to support this important development can result in neural tube defects, the most common being spina bifida. So in this mix, we've also got children that have spinal bifida. So, well, what does that mean? Well, is there a lack of this folate in the system? It used to be considered linked to birth defects, right? Folate deficiency develops when there isn't enough vitamin B9 in the body. The body uses folate to repair and replicate DNA and create red blood cells. A folate deficiency can be caused by a lack of folate in the diet, medical conditions, drinking too much alcohol, gene mutations, and side effects of medications. So pretty interesting stuff, right? So they know that lack of folate is a problem. So, well, I guess you probably just make sure people don't get enough folate in their diet, right? What cancers cause folic acid deficiency? More recently, folate deficiency has been implicated in the development of cancer, notably in the cervix, lung, breast, brain, and colorectum. So, is folic acid linked to cancer? And keep in mind, these folic things, these folic supplements, the Bs, the B vitamins, they give these to pregnant women, okay? So, then I was also looking, is folic acid linked to cancer? In other words, are these kids becoming deformed because they're getting all these different diseases, right? It said folic acid and B12 supplementation was associated with a 21% increase risk for cancer, a 38% increased risk for dying from the disease, and an 18% increase in deaths from all causes. This finding was mainly driven by an increase in lung cancer incident among the folic acid and B12 treated patients, which is interesting because I have lung cancer from what I've been breathing in my home. And I will be, of course, doing that show, but this is more groundwork I wanted to lie first. So what I'm trying to say is there is a lot of confusion, and then people are repeating things like, yep, deformed babies, gotta be the depleted uranium. Yep, we know what it is. Well, I don't think anybody knows what it is. So let me keep reading here, okay? So folic acid could be a real big problem. How do you get rid of somebody's folic acid? Well, if they're pregnant, they need more supplements, right? Well, you just make sure the supplements that you're giving them are lacking in folic acid, right? You tell them to take the supplements because you're going to help them, right? Why do I always say evil has to come packaged as help? So that'd be a pretty simple thing to trick. The countries you want to kill box, you just leave this very critical supplement out of your pregnancy vitamins, right? Folic acid plays a role in the growth and repair of cells. Some studies show that folic acid blocks cancer in its early stages. The evidence for prevention is strongest for colorectal cancer. And you know what's other interesting thing, and I'll be getting to that here in a bit. What got me also very suspicious of TNT and got me really heading down this entire track was I read that they're now using TNT to treat colon cancer. Crazy, huh? Just like they're using, mustard gas and stuff to treat cancer. So yeah, they're now using TNT to treat colon cancer, which brought out every suspicious element in my brain. I got to tell you, when I read that little bit about TNT being used now as a new method to treat colon cancer, I thought, hey, wait a minute here. Where is this going? Well, because I think the problem might lie in the TNT. So I also wanted to know, because here again, I do not know these things. That's why I look. People have confused me with being much smarter than I am. They'll say things like, well, it's great you're sharing what you already know. No, I'm sharing it because I didn't know it. And I thought that maybe other people would find it interesting. That's the only reason I'm sharing it. I have no other motivation beyond that, right? I have no interest in being a social media person. I have no interest in any of that stuff. So I'm sharing it because I don't know. And the only way to find out is to looky-looky, right? Okay, so are folic acid and B12 the same? Vitamin B12 is an especially important vitamin for maintaining healthy nerve cells, and it helps in the production of DNA and RNA, the body's genetic material. So see, we're starting to see that these B vitamins are pretty important, right? Vitamin B12 works closely with vitamin B9, also called folate or folic acid, to help make red blood cells and to help iron work better in the body, which makes perfect sense because all this radiation wipes out our blood cells. I probably have about 2 white blood cells remaining. Yeah, so you become very, very tired. So then I was looking at that site over in, first, let's start off with the site I've been talking about over off of Marshall Islands, because I've been talking about the site over there that is now leaking, okay, because it had all the elements. There were soldiers sent over there who came back with cancer. They're convinced that cancer came from that site. Well, what happened at that site? Well, from 1977 to 1980, loose waste and topsoil from six different islands in the Etowah Atoll was transported to the site and mixed with concrete to seal the nuclear blast crater created by this cactus test. So they had a pre-existing hole there, okay? And they got that pre-existing hole by this bomb under this thing called the cactus test, okay? So right there in that bomb would have had a whole heck of a lot of TNT, right? Okay, so 4,000 U.S. servicemen were involved in the cleanup from this test, and it took 3 years to complete. The waste-filled crater was finally entombed in concrete. And I've gone on and on about this in the past because I used to wonder, because they basically didn't do anything to secure the sand. They just basically started dumping this stuff in there, right? But then they put the cement, the concrete on the top. So in 1982, a U.S. government task force raised concern about a probable breach if a severe typhoon were to hit the island. In 2013, a report by the U.S. Department of Energy found that the concrete dome had weathered with minor cracking of the surface of the structure. However, this is the however part, right? Now, remember, the report came from them. So I'm not saying that we should immediately go, oh, yeah, makes sense to me. No. But listen to this. However, the soil around the dome was found to be more contaminated than its contents, so a breach could not increase the radiation levels by any means. Because the cleaning operation in the 1970s only removed an estimated 0.8% of the total transuranic waste in the Etowah Atoll, the soil and the lagoon water surrounding the structure now contain a higher level of radioactivity than the debris of the dome itself. So even in the event of a total collapse, the radiation dose delivered to the local resident population or marine environment should not change significantly. And I think they are, in fact, telling the truth. So then the question becomes, why was the soil around the dome worse than what was under the dome, right? Concern primarily lies in the rapid tidal response to the height of the water beneath the debris pile, with the potential for contamination of the groundwater supply with radionuclides. One particular concern is that in order to save costs, the original plan to line the porous bottom crater with concrete was abandoned. Since the bottom of the crater consists of permeable soil, there is seawater inside the dome. However, as the Department of Energy report stated, the released radionuclides will be very rapidly diluted and should not cause any elevated radioactive risk for the marine environment compared to what is already experienced. Leaking and breaching of the dome could, however, disperse plutonium, a radioactive element that is also a toxic heavy metal. So, did they test for plutonium in the soil? Well, we don't know, right? Maybe they don't test the soil for plutonium. Maybe it's a word game, right? Maybe they said, well, the test of the soil said this, but we don't know what's inside of those tests, right? So then I found this other interesting piece. Prolonged exposure of TNT to humans result in anemia and liver abnormalities. Further, TNT also acts as a carcinogen and leads to cancer development in living systems. Since TNT can easily absorb through the skin, external contact of humans and other organisms with TNT, contaminated water and soil may create significant damage to their biological system. So TNT is sounding pretty dangerous to handle and be around, right? The first studies into the health risk from TNT were undertaken on munitions factory workers in the 1940s, after 17,000 cases of TNT poisoning resulted in more than 475 fatalities during World War I. Prolonged exposure is now associated with skin conditions, blood, and liver damage. Efforts to determine the mechanism of harm have required a thorough investigation into how TNT breaks down in the body and in the environment. They found some staining in Syria that I found. The pink staining seen around the Syrian bomb crater illustrates one of these processes, photosynthesis. Sunlight can cause rapid color changes to TNT, and this can be accelerated in the presence of calcium-rich soils. So, only study done. It's just anecdotal, right? Because 1940s. So, in the 1940s, they knew for a fact TNT could kill people because a lot of factory people got killed. 475 fatalities during World War I, okay? So they knew that then. Gee, isn't it kind of funny, huh? So about this point, every element in my brain was going off, right? Because then I started going, whoa, wait a minute here. Where's the latest studies? Oh, I hate to fill you in, kids. There are no more studies. And I'll share with you what I found, but no, there are more studies. And that is another huge red flag with these legally people, right? They make all these laws and stuff, right? Well, they have to leave things out, right? It's kind of funny that none of those people have noticed this stuff, right? And that's why I encourage you to look for yourself. We do not need degrees to understand what these psychopaths are doing. So let me continue on. I was looking for all this firebombing business, right? Because Dresden, all this stuff. Early in World War II, many British cities were firebombed. Two particularly notable raids were the Coventry Blitz on 14 November 1940 and the Blitz on London on the night of 29 December 1940, which was the most destructive raid on London during the war. With much of the destruction caused by fires started by incendiary bombs. So, this was my first finding of usage of these firebombs. During the Coventry Blitz, the Germans pioneered several innovations which were to influence all future strategic bomb raids during the war. These were the, I'm sorry, I, you know. In case you don't know, I have this microphone about one half an inch from my face. Okay. The use of Pathfinder aircraft with electronic aids to navigate to mark the targets before the main bomber raid. The use of high explosive bombs and air mines coupled with thousands of incendiary bombs intended to set the city ablaze. The first wave of follow-up bombers dropped high explosive bombs, the intent of which was to knock out the utilities, the water supply, electricity network, and gas mains. And keep in mind that this was Germany bombing the UK, but they're all the same person, right? So yeah, that's how they roll, right? So your German people were supposedly bombing the UK to knock out all this stuff, right? The follow-up waves dropped a combination of high explosive and incendiary bombs. There were two types of incendiary bombs, those made of magnesium and iron powders, and those made of petroleum. Remember, during the attack on Black Wall Street, which happened in Oklahoma in the 1920s, was the first use people smelled kerosene from those bombs. So this Coventry bomb was the next one that I found that was this incendiary stuff since then. Let me see. There were two types of incendiary bombs, those made of magnesium and iron powders, and those made of petroleum. Okay. The high explosive bombs and the larger air mines were not only designed to hamper the Coventry Fire Brigade, they were also intended to damage roofs, make it easier for the incendiary bombs to fall into buildings and ignite them. As Sir Arthur Harris, commander of the RAF Bomber Commander, wrote after the war, "In the early days of bombing, our notion, like that of the Germans, was to spread an attack all over the whole night, thereby wearing down the morale of the civilian population. The result was, of course, that an efficient fire brigade could tackle a single load of incendiaries, put them out, and wait in comfort for the next to come along. They might also be able to take shelter when a few high explosive bombs were dropping." But it was observed that when the Germans did get an effective concentration, then our fire brigades had a very hard time. If a rain of incendiaries is mixed with high explosive bombs, there is a temptation for the fireman to keep his head down. The Germans again and again missed their chance, as they did during the London Blitz that I watched from the roof of the Air Ministry, of setting our cities ablaze by a concentrated attack. Coventry was adequately concentrated in point of space, but all the same, there was little concentration in point of time, and nothing like the fire tornadoes of Hamburg or Dresden ever occurred in this country. But they did to us enough damage to teach us the principle of concentration, the principle of starting so many fires at the same time that no firefighting services, however efficiently and quickly they were reinforced by the fire brigades of other towns, could get them under control. With this was just they just figured out, hey, we're going to overwhelm them. We're going to blast so many things the firemen can't keep up. So that was how that got started. So that led me into Dresden, and I had known nothing about Dresden, okay? In all my World War II documentaries, Dresden never crossed my antenna, okay? So what did I learn about Dresden? The bombing of Dresden was a British-American aerial bombing attack on the city of Dresden, the capital of the German state of Saxony, Saxony. And which is interesting because these people are freaks for words and stuff. The German state of Saxony. Well, the people that supposedly are the British royals, they come from the Sax group, Sax, German group. Okay, so the US and the Brits are now bombing the Germans during World War II in the European theater in four raids between 13 and 15 of February 1945, 722 heavy bombers of the British Royal Air Force and 527 of the United States Army Air Forces dropped more than 3,900 tons of high explosive bombs and incendiary devices on the city. The bombing and the resulting firestorm, see, they learned from London, right? Destroyed over 1,600 acres in the city center. An estimated 22,000 to 25,000 people were killed, although large casualty figures have been claimed. So until February the 14th, 13 February 1945, the Allies did not perceive Dresden as a military target. Only once did they fly over there. Dresden, in addition, in January 1945, and so the American heavy bombers attacked this railway station there. Hundreds of British and American bombers called the so-called firestorm, and here again in Dresden, what was in Dresden? Wooden structures of old houses were opened with bombs, tearing off roofs and knocking out windows, and then dropping lighter bombs, causing thousands of fires, then blasts again to prevent firefighters from working, mostly the wooden city was covered by a fiery wave that swallowed dozens of hospitals, schools, churches, cultural and historical buildings, tens of thousands of residential buildings. As a radio operator of the British Air Force who participated in this operation recalled, this is his quote, "I was struck by the thought of the women and children below. It seemed that we flew for hours over the sea of fire raging below. It looked like an ominous red glow from above with a thin layer of smoke above it. I remember I said to other crew members, my God, those poor fellows are below. It was completely unfounded, and it was impossible to justify." So that was Dresden, okay? So let me give you, I have my little timeline here. So the B-29 was first brought into Wuhan for the purpose of firebombing Wuhan. Okay, that's the first use of the B-29. So when you're looking for things, just latch on to a few things, right? Like I knew in Japan they'd use B-29s. So then when I looked at B-29s again, that's how I discovered Wuhan, because I found that they were flying B-29s there. So all you need to do in your brain is associate some numbers, right? Okay. So many British cities were firebombed. Two particularly notable raids were the Coventry Blitz, 1940, and the Blitz on London on the December 40. So here's my little timeline here, okay? So Germans bombed Coventry on the night of November 14, 15, 1940. Almost 500 German bombers attacked the British industrial city of Coventry in central England. The bombers dropped 150,000 incendiary bombs and more than 500 tons of high explosives. The air raid destroyed much of the city center. Coventry suffered several bombs damage during the Second World War, and most notoriously was the air raid known as the Coventry Blitz, okay? And that was a firebombing on this date that led to severe damage to large areas of the city center. It was believed, widely believed to this day, that the Germans instigated the aerial bombing campaign against European and British cities and thus got what they deserved in kind. So there's always this attitude, right? And that really plays out in this deal about Germany. How easily they turn us against each other, right? Because people to this day, if you mentioned Germany and Hitler, a lot of people would say some pretty crazy, ignorant things about the German public in general. It's like when they go after everybody born in this country. Well, certainly I'm not proud to be born in this country, but certainly I am not part of the deception being run by this country, right? So we need to always be separating these things out. Just because it's somebody poor from Venezuela doesn't mean we should hate everybody from Venezuela, right? They use this basic, really stupid, childlike thing to get us to turn on each other. So yeah, so they're able to justify, the Germans were able to justify bombing the Brits because they went and bombed the Germans back, right? So here's my deadlines, okay? Okay. Okay, so there's three times we're looking at here. Number one, December 18, 1945. So the Chinese leadership, namely Chiang Kai-shek, connected the China war. Anyway, so they approved a strategy to bomb Wuhan. So Wuhan, China was bombed on, oh, wait a second. I'm really sorry about that. I went too fast. Okay. First, okay. I have my little timeline here, but I didn't get it color-coded properly. Okay, so before we get to Japan, before we get to Wuhan, we had the Germans were blasting the Brits, okay, and doing these practice firebombs, okay? So the first practice firebomb happened in the British cities, okay? The Germans bombed Coventry, 1940, okay? On December 1944 is when the U.S. bombed Wuhan, China. And that was the first use of the B-29. And they bombed Wuhan, China, which was also a wooden city, right? Then Dresden, so Wuhan, December 18, 1944. Dresden was February the 13th to the 15th, 1945. So 2 months after Wuhan, they bombed Dresden. During World War II, Allied bombing raids that almost completely destroyed the German city of Dresden. They're learning as they're going along. Now, I couldn't figure out, I don't know if Curtis LeMay was here. I believe he probably led this, but I didn't confirm it, so I don't know. But anyway, so 44, end of 44, they're bombing Wuhan. Beginning of 45, they're bombing Dresden, okay? Then, so Dresden was bombed 13 to 15, 1945. So when was Japan bombed? Well, good you ask. 6th and the 9th of August, 1945. So February, March, April, May, June, July, August. 7 months later, they were bombing Japan. So I am here to say I am 100% convinced Dresden and Wuhan, China were bombed to figure this stuff out. And of course, they probably had insurance policies on all this because they knew they were going to bomb it, right? Okay. I got to scroll past some of this stuff because incendiaries, which are explicitly designed to start fires, were heavily used in the first three Dresden raids. The deadliness of the resulting firestorm was such that even people who took shelter from bombs underground in cellars or subways were either roasted to death by the heat or suffocated because the firestorm sucked the oxygen out of the air. This heavy use of incendiaries underlines once again that the Dresden attacks aimed to terrorize and kill people. Confirming this further is the fact that Churchill specifically ordered that the terror bombings be focused on Dresden's working class area. So, Hitler, who else is saying, right? Churchill specifically ordered that the terror bombings be focused on Dresden's working class areas. Or even more blatantly, in the words of Arthur Harris, the commander of the Royal RAF, Bomber Command, you destroy a factory and then rebuild it. In 6 weeks, they're in operation again. Kill all their workmen, and it takes 21 years to provide new ones. He said, you destroy a factory and they rebuild it. In 6 weeks, they're in operation again. I kill all their workmen, and it takes 21 years to provide new ones. Now, if that isn't psychopathic thinking, I'm not really sure what to say. Yeah, so this is when they first got involved with bombing civilians, right? The bombing of Dresden was an Anglo-American war crime never brought to trial. A war crime, by definition, in any crime that transgresses the laws of war, and the bombing of civilians has long been banned by international law. The 1923 Hague Rules of Aerial Warfare declared, aerial bombardment for the purpose of terrorizing the citizen population, of destroying or damaging private property not of military character, or of injuring non-combatants is prohibited. Even the Hitler-loving British Prime Minister Neville Chamberlain declared in 1938, it is against international law to bomb civilians as such. In the same year, the League of Nations Assembly unanimously accepted similar principles. So then I was looking at this B-29. Was the B-29 a failure because all this stuff with planes falling out of the sky now, right? 414 B-29s were lost bombing Japan. 147 of them to flak and Japanese fighters, 267 to engine fires, mechanical failures, takeoff crashes, and other operational losses. Do the math, and you'll see that for every B-29 lost to the enemy, almost two were lost to accidents and crashes. By bombing Berlin, the Allied leaders crossed a moral threshold, making a deliberate decision to target civilians. This act set a precedent that would ultimately seal the fate of nearly 500,000 Germans. It also paved the way for more resolute focus on defeating Japan as the war progressed. So, the only other place that I could find information about TNT, believe it or not, came out of Syria. And I found an article. The civilian health risks from TNT in Syria's barrel bombs. And this is from March of 2015. The widespread use of primitive and indiscriminate barrel bombs in Syria has caused massive civilian casualties. But do their explosive fills also present health risks to civilians? This publication was recently asked to help identify a substance associated with particularly detonated barrel bombs in Syria. Syria's White Helmets, the volunteers who risked their lives in the aftermath of attacks, were understandably worried about the potential use of chemical agents by the Assad regime. While the irritant fumes and pink powdery residue appear to be from TNT and not a chemical weapon, the health risks from exposure to this common explosive are increasingly well understood and should be taken into account when examining the civilian impact of the use of explosive weapons in populated areas. So obviously, the people in Syria are getting wise to TNT, right? Okay, give me a second here. Okay. Barrel bombs are cheap to produce from locally available materials and were first documented in the conflict in Darfur in 2014. The Iraqi army was reported to have used them in Fallujah. So now we got in Fallujah with all these deformed children, we now have barrel bombs being going off the right. Over the last few years, the devices used in the Syrian conflict have grown larger and more sophisticated. They are typically dropped from helicopters at altitude, and examples weighing 2,000 pounds have been reported. The weapons have been found to contain a range of materials, including explosives, metal fragments, and most recently, chlorine gas. So we're back to chlorine gas, right? TNT toxicity and behavior. It is thought that the majority of barrel bombs employ the widely used secondary explosion TNT. Developed in the 1900s, TNT was initially viewed as so insensitive as to be useless as an explosive, but subsequently became a standard component of many of the explosive compositions used by militaries worldwide. The traditional process used to manufacture TNT is highly polluting. It uses toluene, that's T-O-L-U-E-N-E, as a feedstock and requires large volumes of water. For every pound of TNT produced, 1.5 gallons of hazardous red water is generated. Managing the toxic waste from production sites has proved highly problematic in the U.S. and elsewhere, and a number of countries have ceased production as a result. So, what they did was there were some photos from Syria that I found, and they showed TNT dispersed from a barrel bomb dropped in Syria on March the 15th. And I'm looking at a picture. The soil is all pink, okay? The photo received showed a pink substance covering the craters. Here are craters, okay? So now we know there was a crater from a bomb, right? In the vicinity of the damaged barrel bombs. Volunteers from the White Helmets have also reported the venting of an irritant gas. And keep in mind that original Syria gas attack, where they went to Congress and said, babies are being dropped out of incubators, they're being poisoned to death here in Syria. Well, that little girl that made that report to Congress was the daughter of one of these people. So babies were never in Syria being poisoned and dropped out of incubators, okay? They likely came up with the babies and incubator story to cover all the rest of the stuff, right? So if everybody is worried about babies and incubators that never happen, they would never probably start thinking like I did about, well, what's with this TNT stuff, right? So anyways, that is why they want to keep everybody busy. If you're busy full time with all of the BS they throw out, then you're going to miss the key points, right? So the color of the staining was important in identifying the presence of TNT, but it was also a clue and the complexity involved in efforts to determine the environmental fate and health risks from TNT. And then the only health risk we come up, I kept trying, their first study, and I never could find the study, okay? I looked, couldn't find it. But this story keeps getting repeated. The first studies into the health risks from TNT were undertaken on munitions factory workers in the 1940s. So that's it. That's it. It says efforts to determine the mechanism of harm have required a thorough investigation into how TNT breaks down, both in the body and in the environment. The pink staining seen around the Syrian bomb crater illustrates one of these processes, photosis, that's photolysis. Sunlight can cause rapid color changes to TNT, and this can be accelerated in the presence of calcium-rich soils. However, TNT behaves in the how TNT behaves in the environment depends on three factors. The pH of the soil, it has to do with the soil and all that stuff, but it says TNT is thought, okay, to be metabolized by the liver into four substances, all of which have been found to bind to blood cells. So now we're talking about, they're saying this TNT is binding to blood cells, right? Where'd we hear that? Well, they were talking about the other stuff, radiation binding to our DNA, right? It said, in recent years, in vitro and in vitro studies have shown that TNT and its metabolites in mammals are genotoxic. They can damage DNA. Got it. In recent years, now I don't know where this came from, but I'll keep reading. Studies have shown that TNT and its metabodies in mammals are genotoxic. They can damage DNA. This has been demonstrated using a number of different markers for damage. In 2008, this led officials for the state of California to conclude that there is now sufficient evidence to show that TNT is a carcinogen. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, which has not updated its TNT cancer review since the early 1990s, nevertheless lists it as a pollutant of high concern and published an updated fact sheet in early 2014 together with drinking water guidelines. Thus, there is evidence for the carcinogenicity of TNT in the form of data on the development of benign and malignant tumors in the urinary bladder in female rats. So they've only done rat studies. Okay, so let me start over again. There is evidence for the carcinogenicity of TNT in the form of data on the development of benign and malignant tumors of the urinary bladder in female rats. And wait a second. I'm sorry, I haven't, I switched to a new system a few months ago and I still kind of will scroll like crazy. Okay, so we're back at female rats and tumors in female mice treated for 2 years by diet. Further evidence of potential carcinogenicity includes genotoxicity of TNT and metabolites in salmonella and mammal cells, as well as close structural similarity. So yeah, human populations. Oh, this is always a catch line, right? Human populations exposed to TNT have been inadequately studied with regard to carcinogenicity. Funny how that works, huh? So yeah, they let me see. This was all I could find. Okay, and I looked and I looked and I looked. Data on carcinogenicity of TNT. Data on carcinogenicity in humans, the available literature on the carcinogenic effects of TNT in humans includes several case report publications, a historical cohort study of liver cancer among occupationally exposed workers in China, and one ecologically in one case. Control study of leukemia in an area of Germany with environmental TNT contamination from munitions plants. Only one of the case studies was published in an English language journal. Imagine that, right? So they know of some workers in China. There was a study in Germany with workers. And then, of course, just don't publish any of them in English, right? Okay. And here again, let me see. I wasn't going to talk about that. Okay. So let me see here. Nuclear reactors. Oh, one other thing that brings into this subject as far as deformed children, we have all these burn pits going on. They're called sodium burn pits, an open area pit for cleaning sodium contaminated components by the burning of radioactive and chemically contaminated items. So they have all these burn pits all over Iraq. They're also in other places. I'm just trying to focus on what happened in Iraq just for efficiency surfaces, right? But Iraq and Afghanistan both got hit very hard. Okay, so all these burn pits started becoming exposed because workers started getting sick. In 2002, a Department of Energy official described typical waste disposal procedures used by field laboratory employees in the past. Workers would dispose of barrels filled with radioactive sodium by dumping them in a pond and then shooting the barrels with rifles so they would explode and release their contents into the air. Since then, the pit has been remediated by having 22,000 cubic yards of soil removed. See, their solution is to come in and remove the soil, right? Well, remember, they don't know much, right? I mean, they told us that just remove some of this topsoil, things will be okay. Well, then what do they do? Well, we learned this from Ohio. What were they doing in Palestine, Ohio? Well, they were removing that stuff that was dumped there, right? And they were moving it on trucks. Well, the trucks had no covering, so as they're removing it, that stuff is just flying all over the place into the air, right? So their idea of removing things and our idea of removing things are probably two different issues, right? Because let me see, there was a thing when a couple of people were killed about these pits. So, but anyway, so the soldiers have had to fight for a long time over these burn pits, right? So are these burn pits causing these troops in Iraq to, get sick? What were the Iraq burn pits? I asked. Up until the mid-2010s, burn pits were commonly used in Iraq, Afghanistan, and other overseas locations to dispose of waste collected on military bases. That included items that produced dangerous toxic smoke when burned, such as plastics, rubber, chemical mixtures, and chemical waste. Where were burn pits located? Burn pits were most prevalent in Iraq and Afghanistan. The United States had admitted to operating 84 burn pits in Iraq and Afghanistan. However, over 221 burn pits have been confirmed in Afghanistan. So they're admitting to 84, but actually somebody has confirmed there's actually 221 just in Afghanistan alone. Were there burn pits in Saudi Arabia? During the first Gulf War and since then, burn pits have been utilized in Iraq, Kuwait, Oman, Qatar, UAE, Saudi Arabia, and Bahrain. Burn pits are pretty big, right? Burn pits would be... Now, then I found a quote, which is pretty good. It said, "Is this even legal what we're doing? I had a feeling in my gut when I saw what was going on," Dan Brewer, a retired Army officer, says. "I said, Lord, Lord, if we're doing this everywhere, this is going to come back to haunt us." Yes, it needs to come back and haunt them even more because most people are not aware of these burn pits and these kids getting sick. So-called burn pits contain used medical supplies, paint, plastic water bottles, battery, and even entire Humvees. The smoke was toxic. It's a silent killer, and it may not kill you on the battlefield tomorrow. Down the road, it's going to cause some long-term health effects. And we're seeing that now. We're seeing that a lot. But the U.S. government has been ignoring these veterans' medical issues for years. So, TNT's toxic effects. See, the reason I'm talking about these burnt, it's coming from all directions, right? Now, I'm sure that if they were tossing plutonium into those burn pits or TNT into those burn pits, we'd have a different situation, right? But then here again, I don't know. I've never been to these burn pits. Are some of these burn pits blowing up because they are putting TNT and stuff in them? Could be. So if the burn pits are blowing up, it's probably because they're throwing TNT in there, right? So, so this is the pattern of what they always do is they just do not conduct tests. Like they've never done tests on the health factors with cell phones, but several people have been doing tests. If you're interested in tests about cell phones, go look on my website, look on the smart meter section, and scroll down to the bottom. Somebody has been tabulating all of the known tests that are being done about smart meter radiation. It will light your hair on fire. Go look for yourself. So anyway, so I posted all known cell phone studies there. But of course, there are no studies for smart meters. See how this game all gets played? Don't tell them about it. They'll never figure it out, right? Well, that's a shame that some of us are figuring this stuff out, right? So let me see here. These biological factors all in the activities, these all control how TNT degrades, which substances it degrades into, the length of time they remain in the soil, and how mobile they are. It's a complex story. The picture within the body is similar. The TNT is thought to be metabolized by the liver into four substances, all have which been found to bind to blood cells. And of course, when you get cancer, like I have, it attacks your white blood cells, right? So they're always talking about this, but this other article, it said in recent years in vitro and in vitro studies, but they leave out the rat part, right? But these studies that you read about happen with rats. Okay. TNTs have been well documented. See, here again, no, of course it hasn't been well documented, right? This is from their Wikipedia page. It says, exposure risks from barrel bomb use in Syria. TNT's toxic effects are relatively well documented. No, they are not. Exposures have been found to cause liver damage, sneezing, cough, sore throat, peripheral neuritis, muscular pain, kidney damage, cataracts, sinus, dermatitis, lupus, and effects on white blood cell count. Aplastic anemia, damage to blood cell production in the bone marrow. The very first thing that radiation attacks is the bone marrow. It goes after all of the weak spots. That's why I have my radiation burns are showing up on my hands, because I have kind of skinny hands. So they're showing up on my feet and in my hands because of the bone marrow attack. So isn't it interesting that TNT, gee, imagine that. So, however, cancer risks from long-term TNT exposure have not been well studied in humans, and much of what is known comes from animal and tissue studies. So, yeah, I don't think I need to say much more about that now, do I? TNT can enter the body through the gastrointestinal tract, skin, and lungs. So that means we can also breathe it, right? And then they have, I found this rat study, and it said the majority of orally administered TNT is absorbed within 24 hours of dosing in rats. Once absorbed, it is distributed primarily to the liver, kidney, lungs, and fat. And there was another study here. Wait a second. In 1998, they analyzed urine samples from 9 workers exposed to TNT at some sort of manufacturing workshop, and from 12 unexposed people. So 9 workers exposed and 12 unexposed. TNT was detected in the urine of 6 of the 9 TNT exposed workers at concentrations between, okay, yeah. So TNT has been shown to damage the human immune system, cause anemia in patients, and cause some very serious birth defects for expecting mothers. Such is the power and infamy of TNT that is commonly used as a standard comparison of other explosives and bombs, as well as other things like asteroid impacts or nuclear blasts. Yeah, and you know, anemia, low blood, yeah, that has to do with when you start getting cancer. There is evidence that TNT adversely affects male fertility. Yeah, too bad they only did that one study on rats, right? Okay, then I was looking at Agent Orange, because we got those babies over in Vietnam that are sick, and don't know about that, but here's one other thing to consider, okay? I'm not going to be able to solve this case today. I'm just trying to tell you where I'm going with all this, right? So if you see pink water around, you got a problem, right? TNT is opposed to these other things, stored at high temperatures, warmer climates. Oh, that's not good. Iraq and those places are hot. So what happens when it's hot? Let me see. Leads to formation of pores and cracks, which in turn increase shock sensitivity. Yeah, I don't know about that. Okay, so you're looking for the pink and water, but here's where this is actually where I very first got started, because the only thing I could find about TNT originally was one of these solvents they use for TNT. And that's what I'm finding all over the place. Like, for example, I've never bought cheese that's been grated. I thought, who buys cheese that's already been grated, right? Can't you just grate your own cheese? Well, they package cheese in this country that's already grated, right? And because I'm really sick now, I thought, well, I'll just get some of this grated cheese. Well, after I bought it, I realized the reason they sell already grated cheese and sell it at such a good price compared to grating your own is because they use a really toxic chemical. Any solution they give us is more toxic, right? Just like I looked into getting lemons that were already pre-squeezed, so I didn't have to stand around and squeeze lemons. Well, here again, another chemical. So this is where I spun off, because I was first looking at the chemical components in TNT. And I first looked at, what does TNT mean? And this first got me very suspicious, because remember all this talk about uranium and stuff being yellow, right? What does TNT mean? TNT, explosive, consisting of a yellow crystalline compound that is a flammable toxic derivative of toluene. And I thought, what is toluene? TOLUENE. So I started looking at toluene. What is toluene? Toluene is a transparent, colorless liquid with an odor similar to benzene. Toluene's chemical formulation, the chemical compound toluene, is naturally occurring and mainly derived from petroleum. See, here we go again, right? So toluene is mainly derived from petroleum or petroleum process. Interesting, huh? The toluene chemical is present in gasoline, glues, and paints. The liquid toluene smells like paint thinners, is colorless and insoluble in water. Toluene is on the Prop 65 list because it can cause birth defects or other reproductive harm. Significant exposure to toluene during pregnancy may affect the baby's development. TNT may be prepared by either a continuous or a batch process using toluene, nitric acid, and sulfuric acid as raw materials. The production of TNT follows the same chemical process, regardless of whether batch or continuous method of use. So this toluene business, oh, that's not sounding very good now, is it? So then I was looking into, so now we have TNT may be prepared by either a continuous batch process using toluene, nitric acid, and sulfuric acid, right? So I thought, well, what's nitric acid and what's sulfuric acid? How likely are sulfur trioxide and sulfuric acid to cause cancer was my question. People who have breathed large quantities of sulfuric acid at work have shown an increase in cancers of the larynx. However, most people were also smokers who were exposed to other chemicals and acids as well. The ability of sulfuric acid to cause cancer in laboratory rats has not been studied. Did you hear me there? So, people who breathe in large quantities of sulfuric acid at work have increased cancers of the larynx. The ability of sulfuric acid to cause cancer in laboratory animals has not been studied. The International Agency for Research on Cancer, or the IARC, has determined that occupational exposure to strong inorganic acid mists containing sulfuric acid is carcinogenic to humans. IARC, however, has not classified pure sulfuric acid for its carcinogenic effects. Funny how that works out, right? I don't know. So here again, we get all these big questions, right? Where's the horse and where's the cart, right? Because now we've got TNT causing birth defects, or not, excuse me, effects in rats, right? We've got a few people in Germany working at a TNT place getting sick. We've got all those people dying from a TNT factory in the 40s. And then we throw in this toluene business and this nitric acid and sulfuric acid. I don't know. I think we've been barking up the wrong trees, if you ask me. Because people just casually say, "Hey, it was a uranium doing it." I don't think so. So, Then I was wandering around even more about this bomb business. Dynamite was one of the safest and most potent high explosives ever developed, and that was famously created in 1866 by Alfred Nobel, rapidly becoming one of those popular and widely used explosives in the world. Before the advent of dynamite, the main explosive available was gunpowder. However, gunpowder, while powerful, just couldn't cut it when compared to dynamite. Dynamite was also somewhat safer to handle and use. Then they started doing other things, right? And they found that TNT is more stable, but is generally heavier and usually requires a special initiator to detonate it. Dynamite, on the other hand, detonates faster and is more powerful and a heavier explosive. So what they need with this TNT, they like the TNT because it's more stable, right? So what they need is something to stabilize it, right? And that's where they come in with these other things. They come in with things like uranium to give it the heat. So let me see. Okay, let me see here. And then I found a piece that says, see, they always admit these things in weird places, right? The 104 nuclear power reactors in the United States produce the same mixture of chemicals as the atom bomb test. Most of this toxic mixture is stored as high-level nuclear waste, but some is emitted into the air that enters human bodies. Because they know that children living near these things are coming up with stuff from the air, right? So studying health risks of radioactive emissions from both weapons and reactors has been a highly politicized issue, as the military and industries producing these chemicals are not eager to present findings of harm. However, the only way to truly reduce cancer rates is to understand causes and take preventive action. So, yeah, I think that so you have to follow the cancer, right? We've got those people, those soldiers out in Marshall Islands involved in that cleanup. Where'd they get their cancer from? In the Soviet Union, they had Kazakhstan. That was a place called, also known as the Polygon. That is considered the most highly bombed place on Earth. And let me see, thousands in Kazakhstan remain scarred from decades of nuclear tests. See, they throw in these words nuclear tests, but how much of those bombs were really nuclear, right? Because the Soviet Union, they did not evacuate villages before testing began. At least in the Marshall Islands, they evacuated them, right? There's a huge problem with deformities over there. I'm talking a monstrous problem. The problem of deformities in that area of the world is so big, there's a museum of all the mutations, okay, about what these children are now getting. Decades of Soviet, here again, nuclear testing unleashed a plague of birth defects. When the Soviet Union tested its nuclear devices, it chose Eastern Kazakhstan, one of its remote, most desolate areas. But no one bothered to evacuate the people living there. The testing began in 1949 at a site known as Polygon and continued until 1989. They got hit for 40 years. According to the Nuclear Threat Initiative, there were 456 tests, 116 of them nuclear bombs tested above ground. And here again, that's their word for it, right? Okay. So it's from the old Soviet city of Semipalat, now renamed Semi, Semey. So that area, the people there are all deformed. The people have got cancer. They're handicapped. I mean, that is a horror region, right? But here again, so who knows, right? The doctors over there are trying to find some answers, but everybody seems to be pointing to radiation as being the answer, right? I don't know. I have to tell you, I wish it wasn't true because there's so much of it around, because I don't know. So what they had to do, let me go over this bomb stuff here. I'm going to scroll down here. I go through so much data sometimes, and it will just confuse the issue for my own head. I'm not saying that you couldn't handle it, but it would confuse my own mind right now. So yeah, and then we got thermite. We got oxygen, aluminum oxide. Aluminum oxide is not classified as a human carcinogen, but workers chronically exposed to the dust or particles have developed all these other things, right? So let me see, what else did I look at? Also, what they found was in the World Trade Center, they found some uranium-238 in the World Trade Center dust. And so I was circling around the dust, and it said, the table is a little hard to read, but it would appear that uranium was found in the WTC dust in an amount between 7 and 9 parts per million. One commentator I read on the web put the figure at 7.75. Okay, so they don't know. Is the 7 natural? And the people said no. So they did find uranium in the ground. And also another thing, they're putting in kerosene and gasoline into these bombs as accelerants. The world, who are you going to call? They say that kerosene is not considered a cancer-causing subject or a carcinogen. However, repeated exposure of animals to kerosene has caused skin cancer in the past. So you just don't know, right? TNT is generally used in munitions such as artillery shells, hand grenades, bombs, anti-rockets. In most cases, TNT will tend to be mixed or blended with other chemical materials to make it more potent. One common example is something called amatol, A-M-A-T-O-L, which is a mixture of TNT with ammonium nitrate, but many others also exist. Interestingly enough, TNT was first prepared in 1863 by a German chemist and originally used as a yellow dye. Its potential as an explosive was not recognized for 3 decades, mainly because it was difficult to detonate because it was less sensitive than alternatives. Its explosive properties were discovered in 1891 by another German chemist. TNT can be safely poured when liquid into shell casings and is so insensitive that in 1910 it was exempted from the UK's Explosive Act and not considered an explosion for the purpose of manufacture and storage. So yeah, they just tricked the laws, right? The German armed forces adopted it as a filling for artillery shells in 1902. TNT-filled armor-piercing shells would explode after they had penetrated the armor of British captain ships. So they were using it as early as they replaced this thing called lyddite with TNT in 1907. But there's this other thing. High explosive shells were filled with grade A TNT, which became preferred for other uses as industrial chemistry capacity became available for removing xylene and similar hydrocarbons from the toluene feedstock and other nitrotoluene byproducts. It was the first explosive used in an aerial bombing operation in military history performed by Italian pilots in Libya in 1911. It was used extensively by U.S. Navy during World War I. Oh, wait a minute. I'm talking about dunite here. This is another thing that I'm suspicious of, right? They could be using this thing called dunite, D-U-N-N-I-T-E. And dunite was first used as an explosive, and dunite typically did not detonate on striking heavy armor. Rather, the encasing shell would penetrate the armor, after which the charge would be triggered by a base fuse. So they're mixing in this dunite, and it said it can be used as a precursor by adding it. So I guess the point I'm making is there's these things with these dust, with these things in the dust and stuff, right? And people are suspicious because they say they're finding uranium, but then I look back at this. I have the page for the 9/11 dust stuff, and you're going to have to kind of go and figure this out on your own because, yeah. So this Dr. Busby person was the one I talked about earlier, and I got him from this 9/11 dust business, okay? And he seems to have his head on, I'm assuming it's a he, but he seems to have his head on straight. And he said that analysis, meaning of the dust, while wholly inadequate in explaining fully what occurred on 9/11, was nevertheless accurate in most cases, as Dr. Busby points out. Yet Dr. Busby goes further and explains that he's found similar elements at similarly high levels in craters in Fallujah, Iraq, and other war-torn areas of the globe. So Busby, who looked at this stuff, said, "Yeah, I found this also in Fallujah, in Iraq, right?" Dr. Busby then offers an opinion as to what may have caused these anomaly levels of the elements in the various dust samples from Fallujah, Iraq, Ground Zero, New York City, and other areas around the globe. So this is the big question. This is the big question. And then there was this email that was sent. There's this person called Jeff Prager, P-R-A-G-E-R. And the title is WTC Trace Elements Arguments. Dear Jeff, I have briefly examined the paper presenting an argument on the basis of trace element concentrations in dust and on girder residues from the World Trade Center that the buildings that were destroyed by nuclear fission. The arguments are incorrect for a number of reasons. However, the evidence is interesting, and I will briefly discuss the issues. Barium and strontium are not trace elements. They are common constituents of any material that contains calcium or concrete, as they are in the same chemical group and occur together. I agree, however, that they are present in very much higher amounts than they should. Both elements are toxic, but not highly toxic. Number five, a correlation between Ba and Ca would be expected in any sample since they concur together, and with Ca because they are in group two of the periodic table and share chemistry. Number six, but it is highly unusual to find such high levels of barium. Number seven, I also found high levels of barium and strontium in war debris in Gaza, Fallujah, Iraq, and the Lebanon. Number eight, you do not get high levels of barium and strontium from nuclear fission. They are both fission products in the form of this other thing. You must not confuse activity with mass grams. The whole of the SR90 releases from Fukushima or from Chernobyl amount to a few grams. A fusion yield of a 2 megaton test, which would have destroyed New York entirely, would make only, which I can't understand this, for barium, it is less than a gram. So this argument about too much SR and barium does not work. The argument is even more absurd when applied to thorium. C14 is not formed by fission, but by neutron activity. So, yeah, if you know more than I do as far as if this stuff is making sense, you are definitely looking to find out what this bugs me person is saying, right? And I'll keep reading. He said, okay, let's move on to what may have happened on my deconstruction of the data from the war zones. Number 11, the concentration of uranium is a key. This is slightly too high in the dust and much too high in the girder coatings. My belief is that there is a cold fusion weapon or device of some sort. This employs uranium and deuterium. The output is neutrons, lots of heat, lots of energy, gamma radiation. The device is the size of an apple or grapefruit, but heavy, meaning 20 to 40 kilograms. No radioactivity after the explosion except for tritium, which together with H34 is the product and some short-lived gamma radiation from neutron activations products in the concrete and from the steel. These would be radioactive for a few days only. You would thus expect to find too much uranium and also tritium. You find both. There is a paper showing high levels of tritium in the water at World Trade Center. We also see uranium levels are too high. Maybe the boranium is part of this mixture and the strontium. I have certainly found both in the war samples. Regards, Chris Bugsby. Why use nuclear weapons? This is from another article. So they think that, well, let me give you another quote. Dr. Busby states, are the most secretive technological advancements in real world systems. Nuclear devices are described herein were the only possible way to destroy the buildings without having enormous chunks of. So this is very interesting because he's saying that they had to have been using something nuclear, which I think he's very much right. Well, he's very smart, right? Because he said it's about the size of an apple or a grapefruit, right? So my theory is this, like, for example, when they're in the battlefield and they're loading up these weapons, one weapon is this piece of material they shove into the bomb. The next weapon is this grapefruit piece, which has the nuclear fission to it, right? And the next could be the TNT part, right? So here's what he said. So he's saying that Dr. Busby states the most secretive technology advancement in real world weapon systems, nuclear devices, as described herein, were the only possible way to destroy the buildings without having enormous chunks of building debris fly all over New York City and smash down dozens of surrounding buildings. So that nuclear heat kept that destruction confined to that building, right? And it went on to say these enormous structures had to be turned to dust. Destruction was kept to a minimum, although overall it was still quite devastating. It could have been monumentally worse had standard explosives been used. So yeah, they use, and then they talk about this thermite. The velocity of thermite is far too low. So nuclear demolition turns most of the structure to a fine dust in less than 600 milliseconds. The remaining dust settled across New York City and beyond, with small portions of the remaining structure piling up in crater areas of ground zero. Nuclear energy is the only type of demolition that carries the total energy budget required to turn this material into very fine particles. So, yeah, this Busby person is really onto something, right? So what do I know? Well, what I'm suggesting is this. I wish I could say, yep, got it all figured out. Let me get up next to this whiteboard and I'll tell you exactly what's going on here. Well, what I'm trying to suggest is that there's a lot of variables here, right? I think, after looking at all of this myself, I think it's the TNT. And they're using a little bit of the radiation for the extra charge, right? The ability to go kaboom. But I also think if there was radiation lying all around these countries, I'm not saying it's not, but what I'm saying is if there were more of it, then we'd probably see more of these burn pits exploding. So I don't know. Does anybody know anybody in the region? Are there any reports on burn pits exploding? So I would say if you found a lot of burn pits exploding in Iraq and all these areas, then maybe they're tossing the radiation into the burn pits also, right? But if you don't start to see burn pits blowing up, then you're probably looking at TNT, right? Because TNT on its own doesn't blow up. See, it makes it kind of the perfect thing, right? So a lot to think about. And I will close with this. You are going to need walkie-talkies. You are going to need radios. Please hear what I am saying. Make sure you get things that have a use of batteries. Also, while you're looking over at Amazon, you're going to go over there right now, aren't you, kids? You're going to go over there and look at these things. And, hey, wait a minute, I can get a radio, and it's also a walkie-talkie all in one piece, plus it's waterproof. You can get three of those for $75 right now, okay? Also, while you're over there looking, this would be another great item to have. They have these things. They're like voice amplifiers. So if you're ever going to be going out into a crowd, you can, hey, I'm over here. You can be over there. And you strap it on your back. It gives your voice an amplifier. Because I seriously think this. If you want to be in contact with anybody that you care about, I suggest you get one of these walkie-talkie radio things and you strap it to that person. Because when this thing blows, it's going to blow, right? And you want to be able to communicate with the people that you care about. You're not going to be able to communicate to them with telephones, likely. Everything will be massive chaos. So I hope you will hear me very loud and clearly. You are going to need radio communication. So with that, I will leave it for everybody to think. I know I have a lot of thinking to do, but like I said, if you're in one of these countries and you're wondering about all of these children being so harmed, maybe hiding in plain sight, maybe it's the TNT, right? So be safe out there and goodbye for now.